Welcome to the Knife Junkie Podcast, your weekly dose of knife news and information about knives and knife collecting. Here's your host, Bob the Knife Junkie DeMarco.
Welcome to the Knife Junkie Podcast. I'm your host, Bob DeMarco. On this edition of the show, I'm speaking with Matt Carlson of Rib Splitter Knife Works. I first discovered Matt's work on Instagram a few years back when I was ravenous for Pikal-style fixed blades and seeking out everything in the format that I could find. The Rib Splitter Scythe and the Draug Pikal models really caught my eye. Eventually, I was lucky enough to land a Draug, but the refined Road Warrior vibe of the knives and the increasingly exotic profiles and blade shapes convinced me that when it comes to knife making, Matt is no one-trick pony. We'll meet Matt and talk about his brand of self-defense fixies. But first, be sure to like, comment, subscribe, hit the notification bell, and download the show to your favorite podcast app. And as always, if you'd like to help support the show, you can do so on Patreon. Quickest way to do that is to head on over to thenifejunkie.com/Patreon and check out what we're all about over there. Again, it's thenifejunkie.com/Patreon.
If you search Google for the best knife podcast, the answer is the Knife Junkie Podcast.
Matt, welcome to the Knife Junkie Podcast, sir.
Thank you, Bob. I appreciate it. What an intro for such a simpleton like me. Like I told you before we started filming, you've got 100 established awesome knife makers that you've interviewed and one pro magnum, which would be me. So I'm very honored to be on your show. I definitely feel like I'm sitting in great company being on this. So thank you. Thank you very much for having me here.
Oh, the pleasure's mine. The honor's mine. So I'm holding a knife of yours in my hands right now. And as I said, this really came along at the right time. I have a background in Filipino Kali, and I love all forms of knife fighting. And I came across Libre fighting and the beauty of the Pikal style. And that's when I found your stuff. And you were already there, and you already had a real developed style at that point, and a number of different models. How did you get into Pikal style knives? We'll find out about how you got into knives and how you make them. But first, I'm interested in that.
It always made sense to me. The earliest time I can think of that I was thinking about Pikal style knives was actually just thinking about animal claws. I was like, well, you know, you look at the claw of a tiger, how does it shape? How does it work? Right. It's a piercing and a dragging effect. And I was like, well, that makes sense. As a knife, it always felt more natural to hold something in simple, speak in, Libre vernacular. So, in a scythe grip, you know, with the thumb cap point down edge in, that always just seemed, the most familiar to me from like a self-defense standpoint. So that was really it. I remember seeing movies and pictures and stuff, and you know, they'll have the knife and I'll grab a knife so I can show you. But you know, they would have the knife and they would have it, point down, thumb cap, and then they would have the blade out. And I was like, but wait, what if, and it's like, I'm not the first person that thought of this, obviously, but I was like, why don't you turn the edge in? That way, when you go out and you pierce and you pull back, you're cutting. It just seemed, you know, self-explanatory to me. And so that kind of fostered my hunt for an affordable fixed blade. So I didn't start carrying a fixed blade knife besides like a Mora. You know, everybody has a Mora or five Moras. And, I always had a companion with me. And my first fixed blade that I bought was actually from a guy in Pennsylvania, and he's no longer in business, a little small guy. So I received the knife in the mail, and I look at it, and it's awesome. You know, I'm stoked. You know, whenever you get a knife in the mail, it's a good day. And I look at it, and I was like, you know what? I could make that. And, you know, I spent whatever for it. It wasn't an expensive knife. It was jute wrapped, so, you know, no hard hands or anything. But I looked at it and I was like, you know, it's something I'd like to try. So I made a Sax for my dad's birthday, like 3 or 4 years ago. and it looked like hammered dog crap, right? It was rough, and ever since the word. But man, I was bitten. I was bitten, and I knew, and then I started finding out about Ed Calderon and people like that, Craig with ChivWorks, seeing their stuff, and just being really inspired, you know, inspired, and was really stoked to find a community out there that was into these knives in the way that I was into them too. I was never really into the Bucks or the, like the Cold Steels or stuff like that. When I say Cold Steels, I'm like a general pocket knife kind of, you know, there's some cool Cold Steels, don't get me wrong. There's some totally awesome Cold Steels. But I don't know. I was always just into different knives, fantasy knives, grew up reading Tolkien, watching all the fruity B movies, you know, reading a lot of Conan. And, I tried to take all that, smush it together and make a knife out of it. And that's kind of the very beginnings of Rib Splitter Knife Works.
Yeah. I noticed the Conan theme in both your t-shirt that you sell on your website. I think it says something like Sumerian steel or something. And then your, line, this you can trust. Yes, absolutely.
That's right. A few people caught the reference. So that's one thing. I'm kind of like a knife art hoarder. If I could have 100 different t-shirts and 100 different stickers with 100 different designs and have them in holograph and eggshell, and I mean, I'm a big sticker guy. So I try not to go around to all these awesome artists and be like, I need a design from you and I need a design from you. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I got these shirts. So I'm wearing one of the shirts. I thought it would be fitting. It's actually the only one I have left, in large. And, there's a guy on Instagram, Sawblade666. I don't remember his first name. Forgive me. Awesome artist. And I'm very thankful to have some of his art on the back of his shirt. And so I ordered some shirts, right? And I was like, dude, these are going to fly off the shelf. They're not going to be able to stand still. They're going to be gone in 30 seconds. And I still have some to this day. And I, you know what I mean? So it's one of those things. It's like, well, maybe not everybody thinks Conan's as cool as I do, but that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that.
There are many of us. We are lead. You know, there are plenty of us out there who love Conan. Especially the Riddle of Steel, and then just, you know, even though the way the whole sword is made in the beginning is, you know, pretty bogus with the pouring the steel, and it's still thrilling, and he quenches it in the snow, you know, and tells him the Riddle of Steel. So you're talking about the kind of knives you're drawn to, and not necessarily your average EDC pocket knife, but fixed blades. No doubt for their utility, you were talking about Mora, but then as you discovered more of the universal style. I mean, don't get me wrong, Ed Calderon thinks that Moras are some of the best fighting knives out there, but
still got a ton of them. Love them.
You evolved into making this kind of thing and these sort of exotic shapes, and now you're doing you've gone beyond this. But tell me, before we go beyond the Pakal, tell me about the different models you've made and what they mean. First of all, what does drog mean?
Okay. I'm very glad you asked this. So a lot of people have thought that I have misspelled drogger, which is actually not the case, and no fault of their own. Drog was kind of an Easter egg that I threw out there, and nobody has actually ever asked me what it meant, which is fine. To be honest with you, Bobby, as a quick aside, the hardest thing about making knives is coming up with a name for the knife, taking pictures of the knife. Those things stress me out to no end. When I come out with a design, I'm like, God, what do I got? What's left? What's left out there that I can call it? I mean, I honestly debated just being like, this is number 1, 2, 3, 4, etc. And never giving any of them names, because it stressed me out, because I'd chew over 100 different names, and you know, they're all kind of how many demons and drogs and wraiths and vipers and, you know, stuff is out there, and they're all cool names, don't get me wrong, but I digress. That's my own tism showing there. Back to your original question. What was your original question again?
What does drog mean?
Ah, yes. Okay, yes. So drog is Sindarin for wolf. So Sindarin is a Tolkien invented language. And one day I was sitting in my little room with all my books and I was like, okay, I got this cool knife here. Now I got to name it. And I'm like, I don't know. So I grabbed my, my Middle Earth companion and I'm looking through the words. So it shows all the words, real and imaginary, that Tolkien used in all his writings. Look in, there's names for rivers and mountains and trees. God, there's a lot of trees in here. I'm looking and I just happened to, be going through the D's and I saw drog and it was Sindarin for wolf. I was like, that's cool. And I said, I've heard drogger, but I've never heard drog before. So I said, that's it.
I looked it up, when I first got the knife, and I remember reading something like the closest thing I found was Russian for zombie or something like that.
And, yeah.
Like,
and that's where everybody gets Draugr. You know, anybody that plays Skyrim, the Draugrs are the undead in Skyrim. Nice. So I'm a big Skyrim fan too. So I totally get it. But I was hoping one day somebody would be like, hey, is that Tolkien? And I'd be like, yeah, you get a kudos for me, but that's okay. So now you've popped the secret.
Well, that's awesome. Right here on our show.
That's right. That's a first.
You have one called the Scythe, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's the first one I saw. And I want to ask you about the shape. Okay. So here, here the drog, has the tip down, edge in, typical Pakal setup. And it's got the blade aligned with the knuckles and the tip reaching out just a little bit. With the Scythe, the tip reaches out at a more drastic
it's angle. Higher
higher. Tell me about that, the purpose of that.
So I'll give you, let me see, I've got actually I got my box here. I don't have any sights, but I actually do have a drog that, for anybody that's looking, this thing has been on the internet for like a long time. Wish somebody would buy it. Super cool. So to get to the point geometry, I'll start off with saying a little bit of history, if I may. The first scythe. So my dad helps. He's got the 220 outlet, so he has a plasma cutter. He gets to use it for whatever he wants, except for when I'm cutting out knives. So anyway, one day he cuts out this knife. And he's like, hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about this shape? And I look at it, and it looks like a leaf, like a stem or something. And I'm like, oh, it's something. It's not nothing. You know, I didn't want to hurt his feelings. But I looked at it and I said, you know what though? If I just take it, so it just, okay, for reference. So it was flat across the handle. And then just imagine that this belly is filled in. So it was pretty much just straight across it. So like your typical, basic EDC belly knife. I was like, well, if I take this flat knife and I set this on the rear wheel of my belt sander, I was like, well, I could turn that into a reverse edge knife. So I took it and held it on the grinder for a few seconds and gave it the sweep of a reverse edge knife. And I looked at it. I was like, you know what? I think we got something here. So I took it back to Dad. He was mad. He was like, oh, you grabbed up my blank. And I was like, it's not. So we're not out any great loss here with the loss of that blank. And so that was the original first scythe. And that really gained traction. And I'm just so thankful. If there's one theme that I can carry through here, or if there's a clip note that somebody can take home, it's gratitude. For you, Bob, for having me on the podcast, and for everybody, I'm just so thankful that I even get an opportunity to make knives. So many people start out making knives. There's so many knife companies out there, and guys that are working hard, trying their best, and they just don't make it. And thank God, it's been able to keep going, and people have enjoyed what I've made and continue to support the company, and I 100% and just full of gratitude for every single person that's ever just gave an encouraging word, of course, bought a knife, So I always hold on to that gratitude from day one. So there's that. But onto the sights. So I made the sight, and like this was a drag. So like you say, in regards to the point, pretty much in line with the knuckles. So when you reach out, if you were to reach out, the further you have to reach out to penetrate something, you know, if you grab any one of your kapals, the further you reach out, that point starts going down, right? So that was basically the only thought behind it was, how do I keep the point up without having to flex my wrist the further I go out? So the Gen 2 site addressed that issue, with flexing that point up. My hope was to have a further reach the further I go out, instead of it starting to curve down, wow, that point will stay up for just a little bit longer. And it looks kind of cool too. But that's my personal opinion.
I also, in my personal opinion, think it looks really cool. That weird, because it's an arresting, it's visually arresting. And then when you realize what it's all about business. But when you hold it in your hand, if you do any shadow boxing with it and you jab with it, with that point, you don't have to torque your wrist in a weird way. It just lands, right where it's going. I don't know about the scythe itself, but I have a few pickles that have that sort of angle.
Yeah, if you've had one, you understand the experience.
Yeah, but the look of yours is something else. And something, all right, I want to talk about how you make the blades, and then I also want to talk about the handles separately, because they're both very refined in your style. And
thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Let's talk about the blades first. How do you make these?
So, in regards to the metal I use, everything is 100% in-house, so I have to be able to heat treat it myself. So I stick to the high carbon steels, 1095, 1084, 15 and 20, 5160. The first 100, 150 knives were all cut out with a Harbor Freight angle grinder, one at a time. Made a lot of knives out of saw blades, and I still do. Some people get caught up in or like to delve further into the metallurgy, and they're just like, well, if it's not 52-100, or if it's not Nitro V, or if it's not this, that, or the other, why even bother with it, right? Well, back to Ed. I saw a video when I was just started making knives, and I saw a video that he posted just as an example to people. Two guys are sitting in an airport arguing. This one dude pulls out the biggest flathead screwdriver I've ever seen in my life, and turns around and chunks it into this dude's sternum. And I'm talking like one of them big pry bar flatheads, that you only use for like prying stuff. So then I was like, if they can do that with a flathead screwdriver, does it really matter if, I have a needle point or maybe a little bit wider point, or if somebody, God forbid, Bobby, God forbid you ever have to stick something like this into somebody, because your loved one's in mortal danger. Are they going to be like, oh, ha ha, 1084, not effective against me. I rebuke that attack. No, they're not going to. So, I find that as long as I can heat treat it and it passes my tests for hardness, we're good to go. We're game on. So, yeah, I did a lot of angle grinder cutting. Started out with a Harbor Freight 1x30, belt sander, which is slow and terrible. And I remember I still have some of my first 24 grit 1x30 belt saws. I was like, whoa. I mean, I paid like $5 a piece for them, and I was like, I don't know if I'm going to recover from this. Like, I spent $50 on belts, and that was a big deal. So, I like to keep those memories close, because it's, making knives in that business. But, it's all done in house. I've got, a Majestic 3-burner forge out there now. I ran with a single burner eBay Amazon special propane forge for my first, well, up until about maybe 6 months ago, I finally decided to splurge and buy this Majestic forge, which is so nice, especially because, like you said, like the Chris, which I have here, which I think you need Bobby, but that's just beside me.
I think you might be right.
Subtle nod there. Oh, this lightning tree looks so red. I'm not this red in person, promise. But, man, the three burner makes it so much easier for heat treating bigger blades. I had to do the whole, like, in and out,
oh, yeah.
Trying to get the heat even with the space on this blade. So that was a big thing. So that's the metal.
Well, but before you move on from the metal, I want to, I'm going to put my drag up as close as I can here.
Hopefully.
Yes. Focuses. That texture, you see that a lot.
I have some texture too.
Yeah. What is that? Is that heat treat scale or tell me about that. I love the look. I'm sorry, to interrupt you, but in the beginning I said Road Warrior aesthetic, and that's kind of what I was thinking.
I love it.
I mean, because they are like very like, in profile and in treatment and the way they feel, they're very refined, but that surface treatment has a ruggedness. What is
it? It does. And I just want to say that the original Mad Max and the Road Warrior are some of my all-time favorite movies. So I'm going to say that out there. So it's funny you should ask. I'm surprised nobody's ever asked that before. That is so for any of the knife makers out there, I didn't invent it. I found it on the internet. So to get the texture like what you show, I need to stop it and slap back in the box. So what you do is you take gun blue and mix it with mustard, regular old yellow mustard, mix it into a paste. Now this, it doesn't really work on 5160, but 1095, 1084 for sure. It really sets up good. I never could get it to take on 5160, but that's usually a pretty, corrosion resistant metal. So I wasted a lot of time trying to force that patina. But anywho, you mix the gun blue and the mustard into a paste. You smear it on the knife after you've cleaned it with acetone, soak it in bleach overnight. You pull it out. That's what you got. Clean it off with a wire brush. You're good to go. And
that,
I love it.
That is crazy.
I love it. Yeah, it's super simple. You'll never get the same result twice. And it in terms of style, I wanted something that said, carry me, please, you know, use me. Don't just take me out and put me on a bearskin rug and take a picture of me and put me back up. Hey, my drog, which I don't have, it's over in the kitchen. But Bobby, this thing is beat up from the feet up. It's all now. It is my personal combatant's blade, so it doesn't get used on anything. But I'm a utility worker, so I've been in water leak holes with it. I've been climbing poles with it. I've been mowing with it. I've been jumping in the pool with it. It doesn't matter. Get it out, dry it off. You know, oil it if you need to. But I definitely wanted them to look rugged and kind of the juxtaposition between like an acrylic scale and a texture. So this Tonto actually sold to one of my buddies in California. But you know, you've got your acrylic handle and the textured blade, which I left the gold. The gold is just temper colors left on the metal. So after I quench these, if I take it, and I clean it off with a wire brush or like a Scotch-Brite wheel, get the metal clean, and then you put it into the oven to temper, and you're left with that straw bronze color, which I just think is really pretty. So I leave it on some blades, just, I don't know. Oh, but what I was going to say was, I like the, it, what I thought of in my mind when I started doing the texture and the acrylic handles was, I want this to look like something that you pull from a grotto. You know, some kind of loot that you found, some kind of magical quality. I don't know.
It's like finding the sword in the tomb and
exactly,
smacking
exactly
off all the old corrosion and like, yeah, this is my sword.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the vibe that I wanted people to get. And, you know, and I'll say this as another interesting fact. This is actually the first time that I've shown my face ever as we're still in Netflix. There's no pictures of me on the site. You know, people that know me can find me, obviously. But I thought it would be cool to Not that anybody cares, because that was the whole thing. That's the whole reason why I never showed myself my face on the camera, was I never wanted it to be about me. I wanted it to be about the knives, you know. Good, bad, or indifferent, sometimes knife pages turn into knife, and my opinion is on XYZ, or knives, and then political, blah, 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 blah. It's like, yeah, that's not what I wanted. You know, nobody cares about my opinion.
Well, that's why I'm convinced, you know, I have my own very strong opinions, as we all do. But I'm also aware that people come here so they don't have to hear about that. You know, chances are, if they're coming to this channel, we're in a similar universe anyway, and it doesn't matter. And even if we aren't, it still doesn't matter, because we're here to talk about knives. And yeah, I'm with you on that. Just because you're a good actor doesn't mean what you have to say when the camera's not rolling about politics means anything. Same thing with knife makers.
Right. Across the board. Yeah, I want people to come to the page and just be stoked and see some really cool stuff that, I mean, it's all organic. I never know what I wish, Bobby. I wish people would just all get on there and be like, man, sure wish you'd make some Tontos, or man, sure want to see the drugs come back. But no, you know, it's fishing. It's fishing is what it is. I throw the lure out there, and I hope somebody's on the other side that wants to receive the product that I, you know, can offer. So
let me ask you this. When it comes to, first of all, I'm loving the bigger knives. I love the exotic shapes, the Chris, as I mentioned before. We'll talk about the Chris. I definitely want to talk about the Chris. The fact that you are making weapons, and beautiful ones, like look at the handles, right? We still need, I'd like to hear about your philosophy on ergonomics and handles, because they're so beautiful. But what I'm getting at here is, you make weapons largely, even though I happen to find that Pakal knives are great, just all around utility carry knives.
But make a good box opener.
But generally, you make weapons. But you don't present as a violent psychopath. You make you make tools for good people to protect themselves and their loved ones. Is probably
that's the hope.
Okay, so the fact that you make weapons, where does that come from? And not just like EDCs or Skinners or whatever.
Oh, for sure. You know, growing up in the country, you know, you've got, everybody's always got an knife on them for doing menial tasks around the house or the farm or whatever. Everybody's always got guns, you know, for obvious reasons. So, and then, you know, growing up as a boy, playing a lot of video games, watching a lot of movies, reading a lot of books. Comics, you know, it just, weapons always fascinated me, and I always thought they were really cool. I remember I had it was like 2.5 inches thick, but it was like an encyclopedia on all of the firearms that were made from, and this was like an old book, it was like early 2000s to, you know, whatever, mid 1800s or whatever, and I just thumb through, and I'd look at it and be like, oh, that was cool, that was not. I remember going to gun shows, and there was a creepy dude with long hair who was always in the corner of the gun show, and he was the dude that was selling the dragon statues and the wizard t-shirts and the claymores and all that cheap pot metal stuff that your parents said, that's crap, you don't need that, you know, but fighting was. So I had every conceivable Knights Templar, Braveheart, Claymore, dragon statue, wizard shooting fireballs from the back of a dragon t-shirt. I mean, I had it all, man. I was hooked up with that stuff. So when you grow up in the country and, we didn't have neighbors. So if there wasn't anything to do or for you to do, you just kind of sat and imagined stuff. So, you know, I'm always drawing knives and drawing swords and drawing shields and, I remember I drew my school as a castle one time, and like people invading and attacking the castle and stuff. And Dad was like, "You probably shouldn't be going." You know, whatever. But I don't know. That's just where my mind's been. I've always been fascinated with them. I have a very, very healthy respect for all weapons, be them knife, sword, axe, gun, whatever, cannon. You definitely have to come from a place of respect when dealing with anything. Unfortunately, I haven't really cut myself. I've cut myself probably 2 or 3 times. Kickbacks or a belt will break or something like that. But I always try to keep that in mind that, you know, you're dealing with dangerous stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm very thankful to say that I've made a lot of knives and I've only cut myself a couple times. So.
The weapons, the whole topic of weapons as you're talking, I think about this a lot. But it just occurred to me, it's also just a leveling, a playing field leveler, you know, you feel like, mm-hmm. okay, with this on me, I feel a little bit more confident in this neighborhood, mm-hmm. or whatever. It's like,
absolutely.
You know, giving the cat his claws. Speaking of which, okay, bring out that Chris, please. I want to talk about the evolution of your shapes. Yeah. Pakal early on and then started to see some clip points and some other, knives, but the Chris, look at this thing. That is.
So, don't hate me, Bobby. Don't hate me, but the Chris was really pushed by my dad because he's the Chris dude. You want the Chris, you go to dad. He's like, oh, you gotta make some Chris. You gotta make some Chris. Okay. And, anywho. I'm a fan now. I am a fan. They always just look hard to make, to be honest with you. And to be perfectly honest, they are hard to make. They're a lot harder to make, compared to like your regular EDC knives. So here, I'll let you in on the super secret. So each of the divots fits up perfectly with one of the wheels on my 2x72 grinder. the only hard part, in terms of making Chris for me, is actually grinding the bevels. And it's the same thing with making a Pakal style knife. If I were to take a 2-inch belt and try and grind these bevels, I would dig constantly, you know, because the belts don't flex. Even the flexy ones at 2 inches wide, they're not going to flex enough to give a smooth profile. So I ended up cutting a lot of my 2x72 belts in half. And let me tell you something, you want to make a dangerous tool in the garage? Get your razor knife out and try to cut some belts in half and see if I don't snag something. So I'm actually a big fan of 1x72 belts. It's the same thing I put the jaw here. If I took a 2-inch belt and tried to grind that, it's not going to work. So. With the Chris, I use, and especially with the Pakals, 1x72 belt, but also I will work this off the side of the belt. That way I don't have as much surface area of the belt hitting the blade at any one time, so I can get smoother bevels. So, but no, I'm now a fan of the Chris. There was a run, I think I did 10 or 12 of them. Kind of like EDC 5, I think the blades were around 4 inches or so, and I did the texture.
With the little blue handles. I saw those on your feet. You put that away too soon. I want to talk about it, but I also want to talk about the handle.
Of course.
The handle of the Chris, but just talk about handles in general. They all look, really comfortable, and, you know, we can all look at something like a knife handle and tell whether it's going to be ergonomic. Drog handle is very comfortable, but beautiful materials and a real smoothness that's a nice contrast in surface texture to the blade.
Yeah, you know, it's the same thing. Carrying a knife is the same thing as carrying a gun, in my opinion, is that if it's not comfortable, you're not going to carry it. So the blade handle has to be ergonomic and comfortable to wield. If this thing is rough, or I have a personal vendetta against blocky handles, and some people think it's fine. That's fine. I don't mind. But me personally, what I like to see, like I'll just take the draw for example. The pommel hook is actually a little bit swelled from the rest of the blade, because I want a good thumb purchase on the pommel hook. I don't want my hand to be crowded. I don't want any wiggle room in the handle. I am a big fan of the pinky groove. Let me see if I got anything. I don't have anything right here. But you know, you get on the Instagram.
You're talking about right a pinky here. Groove right here, right?
Yep. I'm a big fan of getting that pinky down away from the cutting edge. So like this is one of my fighters. Really crazy name, right? So here we are. My hand fits perfectly for me in there. There's no sliding. It's all just to keep your hand from sliding over the blade. That's one of the main reasons why, I love the reverse edge knife, in the Scythe grip, is that thumb cap is so strong. And then especially if you give yourself, like this eagle's head, pommel hook, that really lets you just crush it right there between your thumb and your pointer finger, and just, it's just the best feeling grip for me. And the same thing, you know, on the Chris, I think the pommel hooks look cool. I think, a decent belly isn't required. Mm-hmm. A decent belly, because it's not required. I make a lot of blades that don't have a big belly.
You're talking about the palm swell of the handle, right? The palm
correct.
Swell.
Yeah, the belly here. I guess it's going to flip upside down with the palm belly. But I personally like a belly to my knives. But of course, here again, you've got the palm hook. You've got an indentation for your pointer finger. And that's just the most secure method I've found for making handles. I want to show you this other, whatchamacallit.
Are these all acrylic? Are these all acrylic handles?
So, you know, you've got the black G10 there. I go in cycles. My favorite, if somebody were to say, Matt, what's your favorite handle to make? I come from like a custom car, custom motorcycle background. So think like big daddy Ed Roth, right? You know, gassers, 55 straight axles and stuff like that. So I really just love the crazy colors, the pop. Mm-hmm. So my favorite, personally, is probably the acrylics, just because of how pretty they are. Are they the most practical? Are they the grippiest in the world? But man, they sure are pretty, and I love looking at them.
And if the ergonomics are there and your grip is tight, it's
you're good to go.
Hey, have you seen this stuff, Fordite?
Yes. So I order my belts through True Grit. And they're actually having a big Fordite sale. Have you had any experience with it?
I have never used it, or I don't have any knives with Fordite on. And if anyone's curious, Fordite is a material that's basically harvested from the rooms that they spray paint cars in factories. And you know, all of that paint drains into, you know, some sort of receptacle, and it doesn't mix. It just sort of swirls around and it dries into this hard, you know, material, plastic basically. Mm-hmm. And, they sell it as Fordite, which is funny. I guess Ford Motor Company must have been the first. And it looks cool. And there's no two, slabs the same.
It's so true. No, I want to get my hand on it. I actually won some True Stone scales from, Maker Material Supply, I think, on Instagram. I was just scrolling through, and they're like, hey, first person to say whatever gets it. So I said, bleh. And they said, okay, you win it. And so the True Stone stuff, which is like reconstituted stone, I'm sure it's some sort of epoxy or enamel or, you know, two-part epoxy that they mix together with the stone. Anywho, turns out really cool. Brittle, very brittle. So you got to be careful when you're drilling it, but I just love any handle that pops, for sure. In terms of grip, I have, so if somebody scrolls way back, don't go too far back because you'll see some really ugly knives. But if you go back a good ways, I've got more than enough, testing videos where I had this old rolled up corrugated cardboard thing with like three moving blankets wrapped around it, and I would stab it and, you know, just show that, you know, that they would penetrate. I covered my hands in oil, covered my hands in water. I've never had any problem gripping. Now, nobody's attacking me or trying to disarm me or anything like that, but I've never had a grip problem from acrylics, from wood, from G10. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If somebody is coming for my knife, I guarantee you, you will not get it out of my hand, and it will not slip. I promise you that. It can be made out of whatever. It does not matter. But big fan of the acrylics. I love the wood too. Wood takes a little bit longer for me to work down. And then, of course, you've got the G10s, which are awesome as well. I got one here, one of the Skinners. This is G10. This is a Dymalux, which is like a laminated wood in red and black. And it polishes up just like acrylic. Really like that stuff.
Oh, that's a, I know that. Show us all your models since you're pulling them out. I know that one's kind of like a clip point Skinner, I think.
Yep, just a clip point Skinner. This is, it's basic, but it works, right? Clip point Skinner, that's exactly.
Wait, hold it up. Hold it up so we can see it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
I've seen it 1,000 times, so I'm like, no, I've seen it. So, It's got a pretty decent polish. I could have gone a little bit better. But it's a Skinner, and it has a little bit of, texture to it. Just a little bit, which I don't know if you can catch it on the bone or not, but there is a little bit of texture, which I thought was just cool. It was just enough. Just enough to make an accent. We've got the drog here in maple, which is the one I've been showing, working on. Hold on. Let me just do this to my corner. Maybe that's a little cleaner. I should have done that when we started. But the drug with copper pins, the spine has been polished.
Nice swedge on that one.
Yeah, like I say, Bob, nobody tells me what to make. I wish sometimes people would just tell me what they want. But so I just make whatever. I make what pops into my head, you know, like this machete here that I made.
That's cool.
I was like, I want to make a chopper. It's 3/16 thick. I really like what the Atienza guys are doing, the Kali guys.
Mm-hmm.
They make something kind of looks like this. Theirs is way cooler, I'm sure, so go buy theirs, not mine. But it's got Kookaburra handles, 16th-inch pins, which I thought were really cool. They were a big pain in the butt to do. Oh my God. You want to see a mess?
The four on the pommel and up front?
Yeah. I got 4/16-inch ones. I got an 8th one in the middle. But if you want to see a mess, come out and watch me glue handles. It is I can't stand gluing handles.
Well, you do like a Sunday drop, right? Is that something you're still doing? Yeah. And I love those videos where you show everything off and you hold each one in your hand and, those videos are really good. They're a little zen. You know, you can just kind of zone out and watch them.
It's because I mute all the dog barking and kids crying.
But it's great to see the just how something fits in hand, you know?
Yeah, well, and that's exactly why I did it. I wanted people to, you know, pictures do so much, but a video just going over, what does it look like in the shade? What does it look like in the light? How does it fit in your hand? Is it ergonomic in both grip styles? You know, stuff like that. And I would have to say, I can't think of any knife that I've made off the top of my head that isn't equally comfortable in like hammer or scythe grip. So, like, take the fighter, for example. Your hammer grip, you're good to go. Your reverse edge, your scythe grip, you're good to go. You're not going to hold every knife in scythe grip, obviously. And you're not going to hold every knife in hammer grip. But I wanted the option to be there. Oh, man, what else have we got? So this is just a different... This is, I think it's called Lava Flow Acrylic Scales.
Ooh.
It's a really dark blue with some, like a matte red. And I'm sorry, guys, my camera's junk. You got a cooler camera. You look way better than I do. But just kind of a different variation on the fighter. Not really any big difference per se, but in terms of blade shape.
Well, I know a lot of people, myself included, are daily carriers of knives of about this size. Show us the sheaths and and how,
oh, yeah, for sure.
How you have them set up for daily carry.
Here's a Tonto in the Dynalux. The way I personally carry is horizontally, like noon 30 across the belt with a belt loop, with an IWB belt, or make your own leather strap. I offered belt loops for a while, and people were like, take it or leave it. I offered clips for a while, and people were like, take it or leave it. So this is how they come, it's like this. These sheaths, obviously, quarter-inch rivets, so they accept any type of clip, strap, whatever, molly stuff. You can attach it, you can attach it any way you want, carry it any way you want. I've carried blades like these static line, through the bottom, yeah, with a piece of paracord in the pocket. That looks great. You get you discrete carry concepts clip and run it up to just about below the pommel. Slip that in waistband.
That's what I have. Yep. I mean, this is a discrete carry like clip, and yep, right in the waistband.
I carry horizontally across my belt line because it's most comfortable for me. I'm always moving all over the place, so it has to stay out of the way. Yep. It has to ride comfortably, conceal. It conceals really good. Concealment isn't a big problem for me because I don't really go anywhere that I'm not allowed to. Kansas is really cool because you can carry anything you want, basically, in terms of blades, so it's really good. So I don't have to worry about concealed or not, but it never shows. I've never had anybody say anything. And the garment clear to draw is really fast. I do want to mention, occasionally we do sell axes,
Let's see
that. It took a little bit more time. So this is like a little baby hawk, 1/8-inch metal, which nobody really makes. And that's Purple Heartwood, I believe.
Nice.
Nobody makes these hawks in 1/8-inch, but I do because I'm weird. Really, really fast. You're not going to be knocking down any hedge trees with it.
Right. This is not a breaching tool. This is a fighting tool.
Correct. Yeah, and I make quarter-inch ones, too. I mean, if you want to go hack your neighbor's door down there, you go get the quarter-inch one. But if you're just talking organic medium, this is the ticket.
Not recommended, by the way. Not recommended.
No, I would never recommend that. Don't do that.
The bird's beak on that tomahawk is pretty cool because it's very much like a large knife. That is cool.
Yeah, and that's definitely... This one is decent. I would even... If I were to go back and do this again, I would even maybe accentuate it a little bit more. Because the only grip concern you're going to have with an axe or a hatchet is just slipping off the end of it. So you want to talk about problem hooks. Oh, you want to talk about molders. Nobody probably watches that girl anymore. There's a problem hook for you. So this is the Shashka looking Kasak short sword. And I was like, how egregious can I make a pommel hook? And so that is
very much in keeping with it looks like the pommel of a Filipino sword.
Exactly. Sort of, just like some of the stuff you've got hanging on your wall behind you.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that kind of hook because
that's exactly what I'm going for.
Swinging that thing around, it's gonna stay caught in the hand.
It really will. It's a good grip. I do have a little bit of a swell here at the, where's my camera? There we go. A little bit of a swell there just to prevent slippage off that way. But man, with a swell like that, I mean, I was out hooking a lot of stuff with this before I put it up for sale. And I was like, I'm going to chop you.
Well, okay. Let me, you sort of alluded to this before, but let me ask you, about the business, aspect of knife making and, I know it's not an easy row to hoe. I've heard that from a lot of people. But from your perspective, tell me about the business of having a small knife company.
So, like I say, I couldn't express my gratitude enough to everybody that has bought a product from Rip Splitter Knife Works. People are quite literally the lifeblood of the company. I've sold maybe 5 or 6 knives to people around here. The rest has been 100% internet based. So that's been, I never would have guessed that in 1,000 years. But I started out, with the idea that I wanted to make handmade tools for the working class, right? So what that means to me is there's 100 different knife makers out there making $500 knives. And you know what? They're kick ass and they are meticulous and they're pristine and they're beautiful. And I would never want to leave my house because it was $500. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's the beauty of capitalism, right? It's worth whatever somebody's willing to pay for. But I wanted to make a fixed blade that somebody working a 9-to-5 can afford and use and train with and get proficient with, without busting the bank, because I could never afford one of those. I always wanted like a Tracker Dan, a Guadagno, right? I was like, oh, that's it. That's the magnum opus. They're like $1,200.
Yeah, he makes those things with files, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's...
you know what? And that's awesome.
Yeah, but there's no way. You know, it's so hard.
I can pump you out a file knife. I've done file knives before, but it ain't going to be no $1,200.
Yeah.
Is the value there? I don't know. I've never handled one. Doesn't matter. It's not my knife. They're beautiful knives, and he seems like a really awesome guy, him and his wife, and they seem to do really well for themselves, so... I'm thumbs up. I'm 2 thumbs up for people being able to sell their product for more than I sell my products for. I think that's awesome, and I'm glad to see it. So that's who I curtail my product to. These knives all have a personality. They are not perfect. There are things that I could be like, well, really and truly, that I could make that better, or I could do that better. But I try my darndest, and I hope that people realize in terms of the business, I will never make, if I were to charge $10 an hour for me working on that, I would never be able to make any money. I don't make any money off my time. I make zero money off my time. And I do that purposefully so that hopefully people realize and, lean into the fact that I'm making it for people like me, they can't afford $200-$400 knife, but they still want something to protect themselves or use at their job. They want a quality fixed blade with a lifetime warranty. I mean, I'll fix anything. I probably only had 2 or 3 people come like blow out a handle or something. One dude ran it; it fell off his 4-wheeler and ran it over, and tore off the wood or something like this. No worries, dude. I can work it down and see if I can salvage it. But with the new handle on, it's $11 of wood. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
The one thing you're missing, if I may interrupt, is that All those things you mentioned, you could get at Walmart from a knife. The thing you can't get is the pride of ownership of having a handmade knife and having something that's 100% unique. I have a pretty big, an embarrassingly large collection of knives, and only in the last, like, since I've been doing this interview show, the last 5 years have I started getting custom handmade knives from people, and they mean so much more to me than most of my other production knives. Just
that's
because
awesome to hear.
Well, and I've had a chance to talk with people, like I'm talking with you. Like, when was the last time you had an uninterrupted hour-long conversation with? So it doesn't happen that often, unfortunately.
That's true. That is absolutely true.
And then it's impossible. It's like nearly impossible not to fall in love with that person's knives and be like, now I really like. And that's not every time. But the point is, you could be making a knife that a guy's going to be using or a woman is going to be using for the next 50 years, and they give to their kids, and it's going to come to them totally unique and totally capable, and character, all the character built into that you can't get from Gerber.
That's the rub, Bobby. That's the rub right there. It's like I said, no two knives are unique. I have fiddled with each of these knives and put them in my hands and rolled them around and said, does this fit? I've ran my thumb along each of these edges 1,000 times as I'm sharpening them, doing, are there any spots that I'm missing? they are truly handmade from, I mean, I don't know how I can make them any more handmade. And some of them are glaringly obvious they're handmade, you know, if you get what I'm saying, you know. But there's a lot of love that goes into it. And I hope that people see that reflected in the product and realize that, that each of these blades means something to me when I was working on each of them. They all have a special spot in my heart. It's just stoked me up when people send me pictures of knives from about 2-3 years ago, and I'm like, oh my god, ooh,
yeah.
You know, but I'm so excited because people are so hearing them. And just another ode to the gratitude. I never thought I could do this. I'm the most uncreative person you'll meet, Bobby. But I think God's given me this gift to use. And so it would be a waste of the fire within me to squander it and not keep going. I will keep doing this even when there's no money. I was doing it when there was no money. If people stopped buying my knives today and I never sold another one, I would have a massive hoard of knives in my closet, which I already kind of have a pretty big, you know, collection. I can't not do it anymore. I can't not make knives anymore. So I guess I got the bug.
You just said I'm the least creative guy, and then you turned around and said I can't stop making knives. It something's not.
Well, I didn't say they were beautiful or anything like that.
Obviously you're creative. But the other thing is that what I've found in my life is that a sign of an artist is someone, you know, who looks at their work, you know, past work, no matter how old or how new, and they're like, I was meant to make that blue or take the edge off of this or whatever it is. You're always critical of your work, and whatever you're working on at the moment is the latest and greatest. Whatever you've just finished is embarrassing or that was good. But
exactly when you made your YouTube video and included my dog in it, I was like, oh my god, no. and I was like, no. And I looked and I was like, there's another guy,
Dave. This old sword.
Old broken sword. Yeah, yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not good with names. He actually got a drawing too, with gold handles. You know, both of your guys' blades are fine. And they're beautiful and they work, and I sure hope you guys both like them. But to see my own product on the YouTube screen, I was like, oh, good. Oh, I hope he doesn't, you know. It's just, you know, when you look at it through the maker's eyes, I'm just like, oh, God, I hope they like it.
You know,
it freaks me out. It legitimately, every time I send out a knife, I'm like, oh, I hope they like it. And I've never, I'm very thankful and fortunate that I have not ever had anybody come back and be like, your knife sucks, or it's ugly, or whatever. Yeah. You know, I've received critiques. I love critiques. I fully encourage anybody that buys a knife from me to see something that I can fix, or something they don't totally agree with, or would like changed. Please tell me, because how will I know if nobody tells me?
Good point.
If everybody blows a bunch of smoke up my butt, I don't know what to do differently.
Yeah.
And I definitely don't want to go down and have made 200 draws, and then somebody like, oh, you know what? If you make that pommel hook quarter inch shorter, it would be a lot better. Then everybody's like, a little short pommel hook or something, you know. Gee, thanks. I appreciate that, guys. You know, so yeah. I'm all for the positive criticism, or whatever they call that.
Constructive criticism. Yeah.
Constructive criticism.
Yeah.
Talking smack nicely.
So talking smack nicely. So as we wrap here, what do you want Rib Splitter and Knife Works? How do you envision it down the road? Like, in its full maturity?
Well, full maturity. I'll tell you one thing I really like, Bobby. I'm still in my little 10x10 shed, and it's 10x10. I can take like a step over and reach everything from one wall to the other. I'd like to get a little bit bigger spot to do this one day. If I can look back in 5 years and come talk to you, and I'm still doing this, and the knives are still selling, that's good enough for me. When I started making knives, I had no misconceptions about thinking I was going to make it big. I didn't even think I was going, I had no sincere hope that I was even going to sell a knife. So everything everything that happens is icing on the cake, is awesome. I'm thankful for every day I can get up and make knives. And I hope that every day I earn the opportunity to continue to serve people. So I just want to keep doing what I'm doing. I don't want to be getting a water jet order for 3,500 blanks and 3,500 pre-cut handles and 3,500 pre-cut sheets, and I slap them all together and ship them out. And, you know, I just want to keep making these by hand. I want to keep making whatever comes, pops into my head or the people want to see. And if I can keep doing this long enough to pass this down to my kid and teach him a trade, or something, you know, you can do, cause this isn't obviously my first, this is not my full-time job. Just the ability to make knives that people want, that's enough for me. I'm not hard to please.
Well, all right. We're not hard to please either. Just keep making cool knives and we'll buy them.
I'll try.
Matt, thank you so much. Matt Carlson of Rib Splitter Knife Works, thank you so much for coming on the Knife Junkie podcast. It was great to finally meet you. We tried to do this a couple of times and I'm glad it finally worked, man. It was really nice meeting you.
My pleasure, Bobby. I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
The Shockwave Tactical Torch is your ultimate self-defense companion. Featuring a powerful LED bulb that lasts 100,000 hours, a super sharp crenulated bezel, and built-in stun gun delivering 4.5 million volts. Don't settle for ordinary. Choose the Shockwave Tactical Torch. TheKnifeJunkie.com/shockwave.
There he goes, ladies and gentlemen. Matt Carlson of Rib Splitter Knife Works. Go check him out. Rib Splitter Knife Works _ Knife Works on Instagram or the website. There is, he always seems to have, like we mentioned before, a Sunday drop, and frequently there's a video leading up to it where you can see what the new knives are. Really, really awesome. Go check them out. And be sure to check out Thursday Night Knives on Thursday, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch. And of course, the midweek supplemental on Wednesdays. For Jim working his magic behind the switcher, I'm Bob DeMarco saying until next time, don't take dull for an answer.
Thanks for listening to the Knife Junkie Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review at reviewthepodcast.com. For show notes for today's episode, additional resources, and to listen to past episodes, visit our website, theknifejunkie.com. You can also watch our latest videos on YouTube at theknifejunkie.com/YouTube. Check out some great knife photos on theknifejunkie.com/Instagram, and join our Facebook group at theknifejunkie.com/Facebook. And if you have a question or comment, email them to bob@theknifejunkie.com or call our 24/7 listener line at 724-466-4487, and you may hear your comment or question answered on an upcoming episode of the Knife Junkie Podcast.